Imagine knowing exactly what your students are learning and exactly which steps you need to take next.
Join us in Download the Reading Quiz to craft meaningful and productive formative assessments that move away from gotcha moments of basic recall and toward assessing what your students actually can do.
In this 30-minute free masterclass, we'll share three powerful assessment keys that work for any novel at any time of the year.
Head to shop.bravenewteaching.com/masterclass to sign up, and we'll also send you a free workbook to keep track of all your notes.
Once again, that's shop.bravenewteaching.com/masterclass to nail formative assessments forever.
Well, hello and welcome back to Brave New Teaching. Hi, Amanda.
Hey, Marie. Hey, listeners.
Are you ready to do a little triage, a little lesson plan rescue today? Because I am.
This is a topic that I actually feel very heated about. So I'm pretty excited.
You do feel very heated. And I have a solution. I'm in a moment after we get through our little intro here. Amanda's going to introduce to you the problem. And then we're going to give you two different solutions. And my solution might make people angry.
It might. But it might not. It might. Well, it also won't be surprising coming from us. We'll just
100%.
Let's just say that.
Yes.
And so this series called Lesson Plan Rescue, this is our second that we've done. Our first one was, let's see, I'm taking a look at the date. It wasn't too long ago. It dropped on September 22nd. And we looked at, nope, September 21st. Yes. And we talked a little bit about close reading and things like that. That was our first Lesson Plan Rescue. So this is our second Lesson Plan Rescue. We are coming to you from a survey that we sent out in the summertime, and teachers have been asking us for some more nitty-gritty types of episodes, like really practical, niched down to like the microscopic lesson level, the problems we're having that need solutions. So that is where this kind of scattered series has come from.
Well, and as we've gone through things that listeners are asking for, they are things that we have talked about just in like the two of us talking through like, hey, this keeps happening in my classroom too. You're not hearing about problems that you're like, oh my gosh, where did that come from? Like, these are definitely issues that if you have been, especially an English language arts classroom teacher for more than about 45 seconds, you have seen at least one of these things come up. And so you might have your own solutions as well. And we encourage you to please send them to us so that we can like share the wealth. If you DM us on Instagram, then we can kind of like, or if you talk about it or something on social media, will you tag us so we can share with the rest of our Brave New Teaching community? But today we've got a good one, and it is very specific to English language arts. It is very specific to analysis and literary analysis. And I'm ready to dig in. Are you ready to dig in? All right, let me freshen my coffee. But first, let's cue the music.
You're listening to Brave New Teaching, and we are so much more than a podcast.
We give teachers the inspiration, support, and tools to challenge the status quo.
I'm Amanda, and I'm a former English teacher from Illinois.
And I'm Marie, and I'm a teacher from Southern California.
Join us at bravenewteaching.com to find out more about our courses, festivals, and get every episode's show notes.
We're so glad you're here. Enjoy the show. All right, Amanda, I'd like to do a little role play. Not that kind. I'd like to
do
a little. The doctor is in. What's the problem? Hello, teacher.
Hi.
What's the problem? Okay. Hi. First time caller, long time listener. What's the problem?
I don't know how to ask this question, but I have been teaching literary terms forever. I teach definitions. We do Kahoot, and they give them lists. And I'm telling you, they don't stick. Every time I get back to metaphor, kids have either forgotten what a metaphor is, or they know what it is, but they can't analyze it worth a crap. So what do I do when my kids like kind of know definitions, but they can't analyze literary terms?
Well, listener, I'm so glad you called in. First of all, let me say your voice sounds really familiar, and I just can't quite put my finger on it. I'll get there. You didn't at all. I don't think that you're understanding what I mean by role play. And now I'm really questioning my own prowess as a drama.
Let's be very clear.
So thanks a lot.
If I would have chosen a voice, I'm sure it would have been offensive.
You're not wrong.
I think I would have panicked and done something real. Like I would have, we would have had to like stop this recording and start over.
Okay. Well, you know what?
I am not a drama student.
In that case, let's move on. Let's move on. Next time there will be
consequences.
Costumes. Okay. Consequences. Nope. Costumes, but consequences too. The consequence will costumes. Be costumes.
No.
Okay. So I feel like I'm pretty confident in saying we've all been here to a certain extent. Like I've done the Jeopardy game. I've done the flashcards. I've done the study buddy. Come back and tell us, you know, like in 10 minutes of cramming, how many do you remember? Like I've done all of these, like the little fly swatter crap on the board. I guess that's the Jeopardy game where you, like they slap the thingy and then they tell the definition. And I've done all of those. And I've had the same result as well, which is that.
But I just told you what an illusion was. I just told you. Yes. I just told you.
I alluded to an illusion.
It was Taylor Swift. We listened to Love Story. Song. Love
three
song.
Times in a row. So let's talk about a couple solutions. Amanda's got one for you. And then I have one that will build nicely on what Amanda has.
Yes.
Let's start with the first one that might get some of us really fired
first,
up.
Okay. My solution, not my first, my solution is this. Stop caring about it.
Seriously.
Let it go.
Let
go of the list, I suppose, would be the more succinct way of starting my solution. So the solution will be, I will provide some examples. I'm going to provide like more context here. So the first thing that I think helped me with this was letting go of the idea that students needed to even know what these things were. And that comes from someone who's taught every level of English, right? Marie and I both. I've taught every level from ELL to co-taught to AP Lang, AP Lit, like all, I've taught it all. It doesn't matter. And I feel like what made me feel even more confident in that was when I went to an APSI training over the summer, which is Advanced Placement Summer Institute. And I had a longtime AP Lang teacher say this out loud to us as well, and remind us that even at the AP level, no one grading an AP essay cares how many devices you've labeled, how many devices you've name dropped at that point.
Right, because that's what it becomes. It's name dropping. Yes.
What they care about and what we've always felt compelled to care about is the so what, is the analysis part. So, and this, just like reading, the problem is the same. We feel, I guess I shouldn't say we, I have always felt, well, how do I teach them analysis if they can't remember what the terms are? How can I teach analysis if they haven't comprehended every single page of the book so far? So my answer is going to be to number one, not that you're not going to care, but we're going to reduce the load. We're going to simplify that list, and we're going to make that list more directly applicable to what we're doing. So, translation in real example. In my short story units, what I do is I write my essential question, and then I look at my texts and I think, what literary moves, right, pieces are going to be important for students to see in responding to that essential question? So translation, I'll take it a step further. So if I'm going to look at a genre unit about mystery and suspense, what are the things that authors do? Authors craft things that they do consistently across all of this genre. That's my starting place. So for me, I think about turns, right? Like, so turns are things that the authors do in terms of like flashback, flash forward, pacing, creating those kinds of moments. And I think about tension, turns and tension. So those are the only two literary craft umbrellas that I'm even going to bother teaching right now. And I'm going to concentrate those two things in this unit because they're immediately relevant. I'm going to teach them over and over and over and over and over again in the context of the stories that we're reading. And then they're going to have to use them in their analysis. Also, if I simplify it to turns and tension, I've eliminated the need for them to nitty gritty label certain things, right? I'm giving them permission to say the text is moving. If they can say there's a flash forward or a flashback or there's a pacing change or a diction, blah, 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 cool. If we can right. move into tone, cool. But for the most part, I've given them enough to get to the analysis. They can say the text slowed down at these places, which created tension. And like, oh my gosh, we've eliminated the stumbling block of specifically naming things. And we've gotten into
name dropping. Exactly. Like you
said,
we've
gotten
yeah.
into the analysis. Well,
and to get a little bit more, even further nitty gritty on like actually what this looks like. Cause I also understand, like devil's advocate here, I understand the desire or the need, the necessity to begin with maybe a 10-minute mini lesson. That's what I'll give it, of a word bank. These are some of the things that we're going to talk about in the next few weeks. A little word bank. And we keep coming back to that word, like maybe. Is that something that I need to do all the time? No, it just depends on the level and what we're looking at. I like to teach these terms through like trial by fire through close reads. Right? Like, and I know Amanda does the exact same thing. So like when we're looking at a close read, which you've heard us talk about so many times on this podcast, if you have checked out any of our digital workshops, we have full blown close reads that we walk you through for Shakespeare, for dystopia, for memoir and biography. What else has we taught? Creative writing and poetry, right? Close reads are where it's at because they are the small zoomed in details. And so while Amanda's talking about, what did you just say? Turns and tension. Maybe one of the earlier close reads in this unit that she's talking about with mystery and suspense is going to just focus in on turns and maybe in the prompting, give a couple, find the flash forward in this, yes. you know, like how does flash forward does blah, blah, do blah, blah, blah. And it's under the title or the subtitle of turn. And then the next close read is going to build on that. Maybe it's going to call back to turns again and build in tension, or maybe it's going to call back specifically to something you did before in turns and bring in something new in turns. So it's not completely letting go of the labels and the names of these different devices, but it is letting go of the need to make them memorize because that detracts from the skills. That becomes purely rote memorization and not skill-based curriculum because that's what we're looking for, skills.
This is hard to wrap your head around sometimes because we, a lot of times as teachers, we learned differently than how our students are learning. And this is like an inversion for me from what I feel like I learned. You know, I felt like I needed to learn the building blocks first. Well, that's just not, I just don't think that's the case. I don't think I needed to know what a metaphor was to recognize comparisons in literature. And so this kind of brings us back to the, like the big picture is, whatever we teach first is what students are going to hold on to. So if we're constantly starting with terms, that's creating a culture of highlight and be done with it, right? I found something, identified something, I identified this, I found it, and then they're done.
And this is to no fault of teachers for generations. Behavior. But it does highlight, speaking of highlight, it does show why students keep doing this, right? Like why for generations teachers have been saying they can't make the connections. They're not able, it's because we're looking at it backwards. Like Amanda's saying, it's inverted. This whole, from our generation, right? I graduated high school in 2001. Amanda graduated high school about 3 years ago. You're welcome.
2004, 3 years after you.
Really brought you back. Yes. Our generation of teachers especially has heard a lot about the achievement gap. The achievement gap, I really in my heart of hearts, for many other reasons, but one of the biggest things we can point to with an achievement gap is that students like you and me, for various reasons and various things having to do with our context and our privilege and like where we are in life, we're able to take on learning terms. We learned the terms. We highlighted, we memorized, we regurgitated on a test. We were able to guess what the teacher was thinking with lit analysis. We were able to label those things. We were good to go. I still couldn't contextualize it all. I still couldn't explain to you all of the things that we're talking about teaching students now. It took me well into college to be able to conceptualize what the hell anything meant and why it was all together, right? Like I just couldn't do it.
And let's remove those barriers. Let's
And I did well, right? So that kind of goes to show that the kids then that have a harder time for whatever reason with the rote memorization are then just going to get further back in that gap, or the gap's going to widen. And so this is looking at, for all of those baby brains in our classroom, figuring out a way that just is more biologically approachable for a human brain.
Especially if you're teaching, I take that back, for all levels. For all levels, because even as someone who could memorize, like I remember feeling proud of how many terms I memorized before an exam, but then constantly falling flat when it came to the next
using
level,
them, right?
The next,
yes. Yes.
It definitely is cultural. It's a lot of things, but let's remove that, or let's just create units that are intentional about certain things. I think about even novel units, right? When I'm teaching The Great Gatsby, I'm not teaching all of the literary things. You better believe I'm teaching symbolism. Right?
Hardcore.
What is your novel? What is your unit best representative of? What is going to get you the most bang for your buck? And stay there. Stick it out. Yeah. And then you can look at your, this is what we teach in curriculum rehab. This is why it's so important to have your year at a glance. Because I know, okay, in my little mystery and suspense, little mini short story unit, we're going to talk about tension and turns. In my Gatsby unit, we're going to hit symbolism, imagery, and complex characterization really hard. In this, and then eventually, right, they are learning all the things. And maybe at some point I want to do a giant Kahoot game with all of the things. But really, none of it matters unless there's the context of the EQ. So I'll go back to the very beginning of my solution.
Always.
The EQ provides the context for analysis that students need. So by mystery and suspense unit, I like to ask the question, through which lens is it better to live your life? Through trust or skepticism? And so in those short stories, as things turn and become tense, we're learning about human behavior and being suspicious or being, you know, all in, you know, how the world moves. And so when I respond about a literary moment, it's going to be because of how people should view each other. So giving the context of your unit, that kind of structure with terms that are devoted to helping students successfully approach that question, you're going to see incredible improvement because you've eliminated a lot of that kind of free fall guessing of what's going on. So I have plenty of resources. I will include some of my examples in the show notes as always. Starting small is a great way to go. But at the end of the day, I would say my solution is let it go. Less is more.
Yes. And this is making me think, which I'll get to when I get into my solution. It's actually making me think of the way that I teach technical theater. I'm teaching how to use physical tools for things. And so I'm going to get into that in just a second. But it's depth versus breadth, right? Like I am having right now, I'm noticing a bit of an epidemic in the social aspects of my classroom. My high school is a very AP, it's not quite an AP factory, but a lot of our long-standing culture around our community has to do a lot with, well, how many AP classes have you taken and AP scores? And all of these things where we at a school level are pushing really hard for students to find a more well-rounded class schedule and have been for years. And it's very much a fight against a community belief that more is more. And it's the same thing, right? Like more is not more if all you can do is regurgitate things. I have kids in my class who are like, well, I can regurgitate things, basically is how they sound. And then when I really point out just through asking questions, because I believe them, oh, okay, then what can you do? And it's not maybe like, ha, punk, what can you do? But like, okay, great. Then I don't need to reteach this to you if you already know it. And then they absolutely bomb a Sesame Street quiz that has one of these terms on it, right? That I want them to apply within their little two sentence thing. And I go, oh, honey, no, you just know vocabulary words. And then now we need to get into how to actually use them. So this is that safeguarding against the glossary under like the glossary level and into a deeper understanding. And it's okay if they only know a small fraction of them, because once they understand a few, they can build on that understanding.
Well, to kind of round this out, let's also acknowledge the fact that we are working against a lot of subject areas that still value that kind of learning. Like even when I taught Lang, all that A-Push and all that AP Bio kids needed to know how to do was memorize a stack of flashcards, because there was a multiple choice test on memorizing things. And so we are working against, you know, even in the AP world, not all AP exams are built the same. You know, like an AP
exam
is all about application. AP seminar, all about research and application. But some of the other, even if you're in that culture, you still have to convince your kids when they come into English, that's not what we're doing, AP or not. We are thinking, we are writing, we are applying. It takes like a whole year for them to unlearn.
I know.
And then they go off and you're like, oh, well, okay, bye.
I hope some of that stuck.
Yeah. So I have a little riddle for you to interrupt this episode and give you a second to kind of step back and think. So here's what I want to know. What do Moonlight, Flamethrowers, and the Bible all have in common? No, this is not a Sesame Street quiz. This is a real question. What do these things have in common? If you guessed it, then you are very seriously my people. You must be as obsessed with Fahrenheit 451 as I am, because those are three very random things that all are just woven into the fabric of Fahrenheit. And I wanted to take a moment in this segment to feature and remind our audience that finally, after years and years of messing around and getting distracted and doing other things, I have finally released into the world a full comprehensive inquiry unit for Fahrenheit 451. Yes, it is ready to go. It's essential question driven. We're talking all about rebels, rebellion, and society, and every single thing that you could ever want in an inquiry unit. It's ready. It's here, and it is listed on Teachers Pay Teachers. So to get your hands on it, you're going to head to Teachers Pay Teachers, and I want you to search Mud and Ink Teaching Fahrenheit 451. It'll come right up. And what's really exciting about this unit is this is, well, let's be clear. Let me make sure that you don't buy this if what you're looking for is plot-driven activities. I don't have those. I don't have worksheets. I don't have plot-driven activities. The only thing plot-driven you're going to get are a couple of question trails to check in on the reading. So let's take a second and talk about what we do have in the bundle, because this list is probably going to solve a lot of problems that you may have teaching this novel. So what I've prepared for you are basically categorized by part 1, 2, and 3. So everything is broken down so that you have the full range scope of each part of the novel. So for each part, you are given a Sesame Street quiz. For part 1, I would say part 1 is a little bit more in-depth than the other two parts, mostly because we know part 1 is a very important and the lengthier and more, I don't know, I think it's just even more important to teach than the other two, depending on your grade level. But for me, I've done times where I've only taught part 1. So for part 1, there's 2 Sesame Street quizzes and then the other 2 parts, so a total of 4. Then for each part, I also provide all of the close reading passages. So typically that's 2 to 3 passages per part. And the passages are all chosen with Montag's transformation at the center. His transformation, the way that he changes, the ways that other people create change in him or force change upon him. That's the focus of each close reading passage. So I've taken all the legwork out of that for you. So you can just teach. I've chosen it. I've edited it. I've made the handout. I've chosen the annotation directions. I've written the short answer question. So you can just assign and teach. So that alone would be like, yep, thanks. Okay. That's what I needed just to get started. And I'm on my way. But I've also provided some supplementary materials, activities, symbolism trackers, all kinds of things like that. So when you head to the link in the show notes, you can look through the whole product description, read through it, take a look at the preview. And I think it's going to save you time, but most importantly, I think it's going to set you on the path for finally wrapping your head around inquiry-driven teaching. This unit is so deeply connected to the novel, but at the same time, it centers the question more. It centers our essential question about rebellion and about society even more than the book. So if students don't have a working plot point by plot point knowledge of what happens, they're still going to get so much out of this unit and out of this experience. So I am thrilled to share this with you. I hope that you love it. I can't wait to hear your reviews and continue to build more units in the future. So for now, head to the show notes today, grab your copy. And if you're not ready to grab it, maybe just get one part, you know, see how one section goes. And the best news is once you've done one unit, you've seen how you can do this for other units. So when you're ready to start building on your own, build on your own, pair it with your knowledge from curriculum rehab, and just start knocking out these units by yourself, or keep requesting them and I'll keep making them. Whatever works for you, we're here to support you at whatever point you are in your teacher life right now. So head to the show notes one more time, go check it out, and let me know what you think about Fahrenheit 451. Back to the show.
Okay, so I started to talk about how this is reminding me of how I teach technical theater. So basically, here's what it is. One of my first things that I teach in technical theater is it's tools. It's hand tools and power tools. It's understanding what it is, identifying, knowing the parts of it, knowing what it's used for. Do I ask students to regurgitate some of that for me? Yeah, absolutely. Do I care about that they know all of the, are they really ever going to use a metal file in my class? No. Do they need to know what a metal file is for? Not really, unless they really need it. But they do need to understand the parts of a hammer and how to hold a hammer. So instead of testing on all the things, I kind of do a little bit of what do you remember? And then we really zoom in on the hammer, the types of screwdrivers. Because when you know the type of a screwdriver, you'll be able to understand different types of drill bits, the parts of a power drill, right? And then how to use them within the moment. So that kind of just goes back to what you were talking about we don't need to know all the stuff. We just need to know what we need to use in order to create that project. We just need to know what we need to use in order to complete this close read. This brings me to my solution. Let them cheat. Mm-hmm. Who gives a crap?
Yep.
Right? They don't have to memorize it. I want to know how they use it. If a student comes up to me and says, this is what I need to build in this classroom, which one do I use, a hand screwdriver or a power drill? I'm going to be a power drill. Now show me how to use it. Right. You know what I mean? Let them cheat. So I create for literary analysis, let's get back out of power drills, a cheat sheet that we have at our tables. And it's a part of an annotation kit that I have that sometimes it depends on what I'm teaching. Sometimes it'll just live on their tables for an extended period of time. And it's like a jar or a cup with pencils, pens, maybe colored pencils or highlighters, just whatever I have so that students have some tools, maybe post-it notes, but probably not because they're just going to be writing on paper. And then these laminated cheat sheets on one side, it's lit terms and different ways that we can annotate them. And on the other side, it's ways to write your analysis. It's sentence frames and starters, and it's a cheat sheet, and let them cheat. Their podcast done. Over.
I think we're saying the same thing but I love getting a different vision.
Provide the, if there's some very simple basics, right? So Amanda was talking about author's craft and looking at turns and tension. I wouldn't get that specific with a cheat sheet, but I would have the umbrella of all the different things that we might be looking for. We might be looking for some character stuff. We might be looking for some different author's craft things. We might be looking for setting, and just having a general, almost common language that we're using with just even color coding or how to write the squiggle on it. Just a way to navigate talking about these things both visually and in our discussion, that cheat sheet alleviates a lot of things because it's something that students can access digitally at home. It's something they have always on their table in the classroom. And it's everything Amanda was talking about, but with an added level of support. It supports our students who are AP level, and it supports our English language learners, our students with IEPs, with they need reading supports. It helps everybody.
Everybody. This sounds exactly like how when I've coached teachers, or even in my close reading masterclass, I talk about designing your handouts for close reading.
Yep.
I usually will differentiate on what they're looking for. There's a section of the list that's we've done this already, terms we've already seen. And then if there's a new term, I will I will do a mini lesson on the new term, but we're kind of stacking that deck. So like Marie said, absolutely give them. I love the idea of a laminated cheat sheet that just stays with them, because it just underscores, again, like this is a classroom community thing too. They're unlearning. Right. They're unlearning that the need to know the vocab is the most important thing. It's secondary. I think about this too. We talk about with rhetorical analysis. I used to come straight out the gate, like, let me teach you ethos, pathos, and logos. And like,
yeah. You've been talking about that on social media a lot lately.
And that's all they learn. Then I try to go to the next step and they're like, they're so hung up on the definitions.
But what's the logos here?
Like, oh my God. Like, no, that wasn't the only thing you were supposed to learn. And so it's not about like giving up on it, but giving into like the list idea is that it takes a little bit of the load off of them. And lets you
You don't have to answer all the questions.
Put the load you can just be like, look at the card. Is on the tough stuff.
Yeah. And like the stuff that you're like, you should already know this. Just put it on a card. Oh my gosh. Cheat.
Think about how much anxiety that would just alleviate.
Yeah. Here you go. Here. Cheat. It's fine. And it also like when I do this and students who haven't had me before sit there and they like kind of look at you like, did you just give us a cheat sheet? And I'm like, does this help communicate to you what I value in here? I don't value that you can just tell me things. I value that you can show me what you
know. Obviously it's not cheating because it's not that important to me.
Yeah. Right? It's kind of like when I link Spark notes, like we're looking at Caesar and I'm like, hey, know if your Shakespeare is linked in Google Classroom, please go read that and then come to class. Cause we're going to watch it and close read together. Like I want you to have some understandings. So anyways, friends, here's our, you know, our big solutions are stop caring and let kids cheat. So that's
you heard it here first.
Stop caring and let kids cheat. Go to bravenewteaching.com for more fun tips like this.
But if this was helpful, we'd love to know, because spreading the word about this is going to help everyone. I mean, it really is, because you might be working against a culture that does not line up with what we're telling you.
Well, and the things we've talked about aren't going to work for every class. There are going to, like Amanda was saying, even in the AP world, there are tests and classes that have to be rote memorization for various reasons. And you might have a unit or a class like that. So, I mean, just keep everything in context here. Like we understand that as well. We're talking for that overall thing that everybody has experienced of, I keep teaching them these terms and they still don't get it. Try caring less and letting them cheat.
I mean, an opening up, and this is what we talk about all the time with analysis and synthesis and all these is, these are the hard things that they're being introduced to for the first time in high school. But then when we look at how much time we've devoted to triaging the things that don't matter.
In the big picture. Yes.
Think about your course and think about the real estate that you have. How much of this property are you going to devote to the things that they, quote, should have already learned, reviewing them and reteaching them versus the harder stuff? Like, let's get there and then scaffold those other pieces along the way.
All right, friends. Make sure you head to the show notes. We have things for you. I actually have my little annotation cheat kit things. If you want to take a look, I'll link it in the show notes. If you just want to see what the example looks like. Leave us a rating and review on iTunes. If you have, or on Apple Podcasts, I mean, if you have the moment to do so, we would ever so appreciate it. And that's going to be it for us today. Thank you for listening. And we will see you next time.
Bye.
Thanks again for listening to Brave New Teaching. We'd love to keep the conversation going over on Instagram.
And while you're there, check out the links in our bio for the most up-to-date events going on in the Brave New Teaching community.
Thanks for being here and have a great week at school.